Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I suppose if there's any good news about the weather this weekend, Dave Murray filled us in the last hour. Low dew points and humidity, so even the feels-like temperature, which, where are we at right now? Let me check this. We're at 95, so it feels like 95 or 96, which it could feel like 107 or 108. So yeah. You got to take what you can get in St. Louis in the summer. I was just telling you guys that the long days, we're on the cusp of the longest day of the year, right?
The 21st.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And it's hard. Like, I always wanted to cut this deal with my kids when they say, well, it's still light outside when I want to go to bed, right? Mm-hmm. So this is what I'm hearing now because it doesn't get dark. It's never quite worked when I've explained to them, okay, that's fine. You can go to bed at like 9:15 in the summer. But in February, you're going to bed at 4:45 in the afternoon, okay? So you know.
That's a good point. Well, yeah. How does that go
It's never worked very well. I always want to explain it that way, and it doesn't seem to work.
Pretty solid point,
I know. I thought so, too. Yes. But the longer days are creating parental issues, if you will. But my daughter's having fun, which is good. We have a roundtable tomorrow as we take you into the weekend. Jane will be back. I've had a little bit of a Jane Duker respite, which, by the way, is not a bad thing. Kind of cleanses the system.
She's been on vacation. Is that it?
I know. I think that is it. She had some family stuff. Gene Evans will be here and former State Senator Jeff Smith. I have a raccoon dilemma that I'm going to try to solve for a friend tomorrow as well. And coming up a little later this hour, Vicki Hartzler, who, of course, represents the other side of the state in Congress, she has entered the United States Senate race in Missouri. She was in town today wrapping up a tour at Boeing, and she's going to check in with us in just a few minutes. I saw a piece a couple of days ago on Real Clear Politics that I thought was interesting because we talk about these things and lockdowns, and I did make the crack in the last hour because you have another incident of a shooting on I-70 where a guy just gets shot in sort of a road rage incident, or maybe it wasn't even rage. And if you want to stop that, maybe you just lock down I-70 for about a 5-mile stretch from downtown to the airport, and we'll all be safer. Obviously, the tongue firmly planted in cheek, but Jeff Tucker is with me this afternoon. He's the editorial director for the American Institute of Economic Research. He took a look at the lockdowns and was very involved in fighting those lockdowns last year. Jeffrey Tucker, how are you? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis.
Hey, it's good to talk to you.
You said at the beginning of this piece that I read the other day is that you were party to a strategy that successfully helped fight the lockdown. So give me a little background here on what you did last year.
Well, thanks for asking. Back in January 2020, I had warned that the trouble was coming. I think I was one of the few that actually looked into this issue, knew that the CDC had elaborate lockdown policies, like quarantines, and that they presumed the right to basically take over the country in the event of a pandemic. And I thought that was strange, you know, because mostly we learn in civics that we have the Bill of Rights and we have democracy and, you know, we think the world's fair and that sort of thing. So it was very strange to me that suddenly out of nowhere, you know, I'd read these regulations. So in January 2020, I said, you know, there's a pandemic coming. They tried to do this in 2006. You know, under George W. Bush. And so I warned that bad things could come. I didn't believe they would come. I just said, you know, in the event of a pandemic, your rights are over.
It was words of caution, right? And I don't think anybody could have expected what we were going to, you know, encounter starting in March of last year. And obviously the issue now, and it's easy to look back in hindsight, but there were people like you and others, and even in the midst of this last year, I think there were warnings about the lockdowns having a negative effect. The bottom line, though, and I don't know that anyone can argue with this, Jeffrey, is that liberty took a big hit last year.
Yeah, put capital letters on big hit.
On steroids, right? Yeah.
Yeah, they shut schools for a year. They locked us out of our churches on Easter. They locked people in their homes. You know, that happened all over the Northeast. Even in Texas, where I am right now, they were sending SWAT teams into rural Texas bars to arrest people for hanging out. What they called public health took precedent over all rights and liberties, as if, you know, those documents were just written for normal times.
But, you know, I think that what happened also is that a lot of us just kind of let it happen because we were so buying into the fear porn that was out there. Now, in fairness, we didn't know what we were encountering. This was very new. I remember telling my daughter, who's now six, look, I've never dealt with something like this in my entire life. So there were a lot of unknowns, but there were points in this pandemic, and I think certainly after the first few months, where we had some lessons that were already learned.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, but I think what that did was it provided a real opportunity for bad actors to say, okay, here's a new excuse for us to take over your lives, because we weren't used to it. I mean, like, the last really big pandemic we had was in 1968 and 69, and that was during a time when there was an ethos that we knew how to deal with this, which was not to destroy people's lives, but rather, you know, cure the sick, like normal things, you know, like doctor-patient relationships and that sort of thing.
You know, you highlighted something here about going into bars and making arrests. Remember some of the citations we were doing, and I've said this a couple of times, we were actually doing the exact opposite of what we should have been doing. We should have been telling people, go outside as much as you can. They were kicking people off beaches a year ago.
Yeah, it was outrageous. The very first thing that happened was the March 8th, as far as I remember. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but my first memory of lockdowns was March 8th, and that was the cancellation of South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, by the mayor. He just on his own decided to cancel the entire event, which was going to be 250,000 people, hugely important to the Austin economy. And he just canceled it and, you know, nixed all these contracts, everybody with hotels had lost their money, plane flights, you name it. And I couldn't believe it. I mean, I wrote an article on March 8th. I said, why this draconian reaction to a virus, you know?
Well, and I think a lot of people would say, though, and I understand that, and I remember that because that was at the time where at the very first move that was made, for example, from the NCAA, and we were going to host some basketball games here just a few blocks from where I'm sitting right now, was, okay, we're going to hold the tournament but no fans, which seemed sort of ludicrous. And then they canceled the whole tournament. But let me ask this question, because if you look back at that week and all the extreme lockdowns, couldn't some folks make the case that if we did have the NCAA tournament, we did have South by Southwest, that these moments that were happening in New York or elsewhere would have spread more rapidly through the country? Or are you not convinced of that?
No, I don't think so. I think it's an invisible thing. And, it's, you know, we've been at a delicate dance with pathogens for a million years. And we've never been able to control them. There's never been a time in history where humanity has figured out how to control viruses perfectly. There's certain things you can do, but those were kind of baked into the social order already. Older people realize they need to protect themselves during the flu season. That's a normal thing.
Yeah.
People who manage nursing homes know that when the new bug and the new germ is out there, to not have employees that go from place to place and bring pathogens in and so on. And that was a normal, that was prevailing knowledge. I think we could have done everything better with prevailing knowledge rather than lockdowns. And, you know, the lockdowns were weird because they were, you know, premised on the idea that this was the worst pandemic since 1918. I mean, that's what Donald McNeil said on February 27th on the New York Times podcast. This is as bad as 1918. So there was a sense of panic in the air, you know, And so one of the things that led to that the consequence of panic was this idea that we had to shut off all of our hospitals to everything but COVID.
Right, right.
And so all elective surgeries were canceled, which led to like a 50% decline in cancer screenings. I think it might be more than that. Dentistry was basically abolished. Diagnostics collapsed. Healthcare spending in general in 2020 went down about 8 or 9%, which is an amazing thing to happen during a pandemic. And that was there's a presumption that all the hospitals were going to fill up, which they didn't. And
in many cases, not even close. There were ships brought into New York, all these other things that were being set up for temporary facilities. And I guess you did have to plan, but that was not even tapped into minimally.
No, not even close. And and a lot of hospitals in the country, like 450 hospitals furloughed nurses. They got rid of them because there wasn't any business for them. So, and also I saw just yesterday for the very first time the order from Governor Cuomo in New York that nursing homes were not allowed to reject COVID patients. And as far as anybody knows, that led to about 50,000 unnecessary deaths. So they shoved COVID patients back into nursing homes. So we did the opposite of what public health in the 20th century would have recommended. And I've maintained from the beginning about this whole thing that it was all a consequence of a crazy model that developed in about 2006. Just a wacky view of how to handle a pandemic. It was an experiment. And we were the guinea pigs.
Jeffrey Tucker with me. He's the editorial director for the American Institute for Economic Research, wrote a column on lockdowns and how they failed us miserably last year. You actually took a look at some of the resistance to some of these things that were happening, not only here, but around the globe. And you found some surprising things, didn't you?
Well, there has been a lot of resistance, a lot of copycat. I think when the U.S. went full lockdown, everybody in the world just said, oh, this is the free country, the freest country in the world, the country that innovated the idea of freedom, and now they're locking down, so we have to lock down too. But there was a lot of resistance, actually. It took a long time to develop, much longer than I expected. I was writing against this stuff in, like I say, January of 2020, and I didn't really feel as if I had compatriots and comrades and people. Like I felt like it was almost into the summer.
Yeah. Well, because I think everyone was dancing. You were living in fear for those first few months. I mean, you got to remember in March and April, I think people were still going up to door handles and putting their shirt over their hands and things like that, right?
I know. Yeah, there was a fear that it lives on surfaces. And even now, there's a lot of surface cleaning. It was like science long ago refuted
that. I know.
That.
Well, don't get me started on that because that drives me crazy, too, especially with the outdoor transmission and everything we know about that. But look, do you think, because there are lessons, there are a lot of lessons here moving toward the future, if this will happen again, hopefully not in our lifetimes, but I don't have a whole lot of confidence that somebody in government is going to get together and have a better plan.
So my worry is that government's unwilling to admit error. That's just sort of the nature of government. Like, as far as I know, the only governor who's admitted that he did the wrong thing was Ron DeSantis of Florida. And he, above everybody else, did the right thing. But he admitted having done the wrong thing by locking down the state, right? So my concern is that a lot of what's happening right now is designed to sort of cover up and excuse what they did. So, yes, there's pandemic plans. I mean, I think Biden said yesterday that another pathogen's on the way, and we're going to have to figure out how to deal with it earlier. So this, my worry is that the story that people are telling is that the problem is that we didn't lock down soon enough, fast enough, hard enough. Have you sensed that too?
Oh, yeah. You're gonna continue to get that. But, I think that what's interesting is in my area, this part of the country in particular, and I think you addressed this a little bit in the piece, Jeffrey, is that I found it very interesting that there were a group of people, I've done talk radio for decades and talk about politics, but there was this group of people who never got involved in politics, parents of young kids who were involved in sports,
right,
that got really pissed off about what was happening, especially in our area here, yeah, where there were reasons given for lockdowns and shutdowns and keeping youth sports, you know, not operating, that were completely bogus and made up. And they were finally revealed by the media, but it was outrageous, at least here in the St. Louis area. And this took place. I mean, just look of the devastating consequences that we'll never know the whole reach for years for kids not being in school last year. We're lucky here. We got kids in school in the St. Louis area a lot sooner than other parts of the country, but there were some that never really got back.
You know, that's right. And really, this speaks to a very, very important element of all of this stuff, which is that a lot of the lockdowns happened by adult, ruling class adults, you know, the Zoom class, the laptop people, which is about a third of the American public, could just work at home. And they said, all right, screw everybody else. Let them get the disease. We're going to stay safe. But the sacrificing of the children was something that shocked me. I still can't quite fathom.
Well, look, I said this yesterday. You probably remember this, Jeffrey Tucker. Remember about a year ago in June of 2020, there were teachers that were protesting and in Detroit holding signs about killing, you know, stop killing our teachers. It was ludicrous.
It was. I mean, you know, they were never in danger. The people who were in danger were the elderly, you know, with comorbidities. And as the demographics are coming out, like 85% of the deaths in Florida were for people above the age of 85.
Right.
And that was more than all the other groups combined, right? So the demographics of this thing, here we are a year and a half into this whole thing, and there's still not public awareness of this.
Well, how about the, I'd have to look up the exact figure, but 60% of those serious COVID patients or those who died were obese too.
Obesity is a factor. It's like age is number one. I would say living in a nursing home is number two, and obesity is number three. No question about that. But yeah, we somehow can't talk about this. This is a strange virus. It's very interesting, very different from 57, 58, 68, 60, and even polio from the early 40s. It profoundly affected almost, I wouldn't say exclusively, but almost exclusively affected the very old and infirm.
Yeah, well, it's kind of the opposite of what happened in 1918.
Oh, listen, 1918, we could talk about that. Yeah, that was spread across all populations. But, you know, there a lot of research has been done about 1918, and your listeners really need to understand this. It wasn't the virus, which was H1N1, that killed people. It was pneumonia. It was a bacterial infection that followed the virus. And do you know who the researcher who discovered this was? His name?
No.
Anthony Fauci.
Really?
Yep.
Look at that as a little trivia note here this afternoon on 97.1 FM Talk. Jeffrey Tucker, I appreciate the piece. He's the editorial director for the American Institute for Economic Research. This is a topic we're going to keep talking about with lockdowns, and hopefully people will realize the devastating effects and we do things differently if there is a next time. Jeffrey, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you. Bye-bye.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Cardinals start a series in Atlanta tonight. We'll have Frank Cusumano on that tomorrow afternoon, 4:45. Of course, Dan Buffa on films and entertainment in the 4 o'clock hour. We have Suze News as well. Jane will be here on the roundtable tomorrow. Gene Evans, the former executive director of the state GOP, and Jeff Smith, former state senator. That's in the 3 o'clock hour. I have a good raccoon topic for tomorrow. I'm very excited about as well. So we'll get to that as we take you into the weekend. We are joined this afternoon by, I guess, maybe the newest entrant into the United States Senate race in Missouri, Vicky Hartzler, congresswoman from the other side of the state. Didn't make that official a couple of weeks ago, but you're in town right now, Vicky, right?
Absolutely. I flew out from Washington, D.C. directly here as my role as ranking member of Tactical Air and Land Forces Subcommittee on the House Armed Services Committee to meet with Boeing officials and to tour their facility and visit with those individuals that are making such a tremendous aircraft, the F-18, because the Department of Defense and President Biden has proposed stopping buying any more of these very, very important tactical aircraft. And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Yeah, it seems like a waste of time because Cori Bush wants to defund the Pentagon, Congresswoman.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Our number one, you know, duty in Congress is to provide for the common defense. And we have so many threats facing us now, whether it be China or whether it be Russia, Iran, North Korea, criminal cartels with the southern border, terrorist organization. We need to be building up our military capabilities, not defunding them.
So what was that tour like? I'm kind of jealous because I think that would be a fun thing to see firsthand over there at Boeing.
Oh, it is incredible. It fills you with so much pride in what we do right here in Missouri to keep our nation safe. And the F-18 has such tremendous capabilities. It flies off our aircraft carriers, has been the workhorse for years. It is the backbone of our tactical air capabilities. And even though the Navy is in the design stages and development stages of a next-generation aircraft, they are not going to be available for years. And by stopping production, we're going to have a huge capability gap and an operational risk that we cannot afford. And so I have been successful in past years, along with others in the Missouri delegation, to keep this F-18 line going, to continue to procure them. And we're going to continue to lead the fight this year. In fact, the Navy has a 49 aircraft shortfall already. That's almost the equivalent of an entire aircraft carrier wing shortfall without this. And so why they would think it would be smart to stop production of this aircraft, I have no idea. But we're going to be working tirelessly to try to get this reversed.
Well, and, you know, I know that you're up against it here with this administration, though, on these issues, though, aren't you? Especially with the Squad and other people talking about defunding. I mean, how can you even say something like that? I guess nothing shocks people anymore, defund the Pentagon. Sure. Because, as you pointed out, and this is something that might surprise folks, I don't believe there's a constitutional responsibility on the members of Congress to fund things relating to climate change, right? The nation's defense is, although I think they want to toss that into the nation's defense comically, but that's actually a constitutional responsibility that you have as an elected official.
It is, and it's a sad statement on this president and this administration's priorities when he comes out with a budget that increases social programs and other parts of the area of government budget by 16%, and yet the most important thing we're supposed to do, he cuts the defense budget by over $4 billion, and that's what has put the Navy in this difficult position of trying to figure out where we're going to cut, what programs are we going to do away with, and it's the exact opposite of the priorities we should be carrying forth as leaders in this country and the priorities that I have and that we have here in Missouri. I mean, this program alone isn't just vital for our warfighters to make sure that they have the capability to, kill any threat or deter that threat. But it also is important for jobs. Right here in this area, the F-18 supports over 16,000 jobs. So it's just vital that we keep this program going. And I was successful the last couple of years in getting the Department of Defense to start buying the F-15 airplane again. And that has been responsible for over 1,000 jobs in this area alone. And so 55,000 jobs worldwide contribute to the F-15. But we've got to focus now on the F-18. The Navy, or the Air Force, did request 12 new F-15s. But you know, the F-18 now is our focus because that's what's in jeopardy.
I know you've been busy and traveling today. Any reaction? There were two significant Supreme Court decisions. One was unanimous, which doesn't happen very often, in favor of the Catholic Foster Group. I think that was a Pennsylvania case. And then also upholding the Affordable Care Act again. And that was something that I think may have disappointed some Republicans. Did you have a chance to look at those decisions?
I had a chance to look at the first one, not the one with the Affordable Care Act, but I was thrilled with the decision, the unanimous decision supporting religious freedom, really. And it's a win for not only our First Amendment, but also for foster children. This was a very discriminatory act that the city of Philadelphia did against Catholic services, saying that even though you had provided outstanding foster care service and adoption services to hundreds of thousands of needy children in Philadelphia, just because you adhere to your faith tenets of what marriage should look like and place them, those children, with foster homes where there's a mother and a father in the home, we're going to cut you off and not let you participate in foster care anymore in the city of Philadelphia. Totally discriminatory, and I'm so thankful that they challenged it. I was proud to sign on to the amicus brief with Representative Mike Kelly, who led the effort in Congress for members who wanted to support them in their effort before the Supreme Court. And what a decisive victory. This is really a great day for our religious freedoms, that you cannot discriminate against somebody just because they adhold to their religious beliefs.
It was an outstanding ruling, and it was also awesome to see it be, because I don't understand why some of these other things, if you're really looking at the Constitution on the gun issues and everything else, they should be unanimous. In this case, even the, you know, liberal members of the court saw the, you know, the problem with that particular case.
Yes, it was heartwarming for sure, and encouraging for those of us who have been disappointed by some court decisions in the past. But when it comes to this, which is blatant discrimination based on your religious views and hurting children, it really was heartwarming to see them all stand together and say, no, this is something worth fighting for and defending these rights, and it's good for the children.
Congresswoman Vicki Hartzell is with me this afternoon on 97.1 FM Talk. She's, of course, running for the United States Senate as well. You're also, Vicki, on the Congressional Executive Commission on China. I did have Congresswoman Wagner on yesterday talking about some legislation that she's filing, trying to get China to pay for what they did to the world. So where are you? I don't know. You might have your own legislation, but where are you on that issue right now? And is there, how politically real is cracking down on China with sanctions or some other form of punishment?
Well, definitely we need to pursue all avenues to try to make them pay, because we know it, they were responsible for it, whether it was accidental or whether it was out of the Wuhan Institute of Virology. They are responsible for unleashing this on the rest of the world. They covered it up. And as a result, they have death on their hands, 600,000 Americans, millions of people worldwide. And so they should pay for it. I have, yes, on this Congressional Executive Commission on China, and what we do is produce a yearly report exposing their awful human rights abuses, whether it be from the Uyghur Muslims in the Xinjiang province, or whether it's their persecution of Christians and imprisoning people, or the concerns with unapproved donor of organ donors from Falun Gong. They are just committing horrific human rights abuses, such that you had Secretary Pompeo and our U.S. government last year declare it genocide what they're doing up there in the Xinjiang province by forcing women to have abortions and sterilization. So I've introduced a bill to sanction everyone who's involved in that process and to shine the light on that. And because of my work shining the light on them, they have sanctioned me. The Chinese Communist Party has sanctioned me, and I'm very proud of that. I think, you know, I've introduced legislation that has passed to stop our federal government from buying video surveillance equipment and radio communication equipment from the Chinese government. I have another bill that I've introduced to change our visa system to allow us to deny access to our country for anyone who had been caught with espionage in the past. Currently, our system needs to be updated that you can only deny a Chinese person coming to our country if you have knowledge of a future act of espionage that they are going to conduct. But if they have a past history of being kicked out of our country for stealing our secrets, we cannot deny them the ability to come back. It is absolutely ludicrous. So, you know, that's another bill that I'm sponsoring. So I am very much focused on China, and would encourage people to go to my website at hartzler.house.gov, where you can access a four-part video series that I have just released and produced within the last couple of months to let Missourians know about the threat. The first one covers the military threat, and you can see the pictures of the different capabilities that they have and how they now have more people in their Navy than we do. Are there more ships? I mean, than we do. They have more people in their Army than we do. And it is very, very concerning. They have more ground-based missiles than we do. The second video talks about the economic threat, explains what the Belt and Road Initiative is and how they use debt trap diplomacy in third world countries in order to get them beholden to China and to take over natural resources and strategic ports and other things. The third one covers their malign influence and how they use propaganda and the Confucius Institutes and other things to, in our own country here, to try to shape public opinion in favor of China. And the last one covers the human rights abuses, and we show pictures of what's going on with the concentration camp. So go to hartzler.house.gov. Please educate yourself and share it with your friends about what they're doing, because we need to be aware as Americans of this threat and be ready to take steps to defend and deter this threat.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good tutorial for even a guy who does a talk show in St. Louis. I'm going to have to check that out. So the president just wrapped up a summit, of course, with Vladimir Putin. Here's what Lindsey Graham said on the Senate side.
My takeaway is that Biden has no idea who Putin is. The entire democracy has collapsed in Russia. And here's what Biden doesn't understand. Putin could give a damn of what you think about him. The only thing he's going to respond to is when you threaten his power. And I saw nothing coming out of this summit threatening Putin's power.
Yeah, Congresswoman, President Reagan, of course, said peace through strength. There wasn't a lot of strength on the part of the president yesterday.
No, I thought it was a mistake to meet with him in the first place. You do not reward bad behavior. Putin has been testing him. I mean, they have hundreds of thousands of troops positioned on the Ukraine border, which is a direct assault and threat to NATO, challenging us on that front. President Biden has approved the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which is going to bring in all kinds of money for Russia without even asking for any concessions beforehand. And at the same time, he's killed our pipeline and our jobs here in America, the Keystone pipeline. And with these cyber attacks that have absolutely crippled our economy, endangering us actually without the access to petroleum on the East Coast. And then with our JBS meatpacking plant, shutting that down as well, endangering the ability for consumers to actually have access to food. You don't go and sit down and reward somebody and meet with them and give them a platform after they've done that, after they've made changes to their behavior, after they've removed the troops from the border, after they have arrested these criminal gangs, then maybe you go meet with them. So I thought the whole thing was a mistake, and it just further empowered Putin.
Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler, thanks so much for visiting here this afternoon while you're in St. Louis. I'm guessing we'll hear a lot from you here in the near future just because of the Senate race. So I appreciate it, Vicki. Thank you so much.
I look forward to visiting with you further. Have a good day.
Take care. Look, she's good, and I don't know her that well. I really, you know, I've only interviewed her a few times, and she is a formidable opponent in the Senate race. And here's what I like about this Senate race, for the most part, outside of McCloskey. We have serious candidates who know the issues and are smart. With Eric Schmidt,
yep.
If Congressman Wagner or Congressman Smith gets in, I know people have their thoughts about Eric Greitens. I have my own, and Eric and I go way back, but he's a smart guy, and he understands issues. Now, whether or not that plays a significant role here in this race or not, the interpretation that a lot of people have is that with all these members of Congress at least thinking about getting in this race, they're not too afraid of Eric Greitens. We'll talk more about that Senate race and some of the comments from Congresswoman Hartzler and Wagner tomorrow on the Reardon Roundtable, the 3 o'clock hour. Jane Duker, Gene Evans, and Jeff Smith. An audio cut of the day still coming up here on 97.1 FM Talk.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, well, the weekend is almost here. We'll get you in appropriately tomorrow with a Reardon Roundtable in the 3 o'clock hour. We were going to do a U.S. Open update with Dan Reardon, having a little trouble getting a hold of him. Plus, we're running out of time, so I think I'm going to move that till tomorrow. But I'm excited because I can watch the U.S. Open tonight on NBC. They have primetime coverage.
Tonight?
Yeah, because, well, the tournament is in San
Torrey
Diego.
Torrey Pines.
So I was wrong yesterday. I think I said that all the tee times were in the afternoon. That was fake news. They were plenty of tee times this morning. But the primetime coverage, they're still playing golf there. It's only, you know, almost 4 o'clock.
That's a
so they're going to play golf until about probably 6 or 7 Pacific, which affords us some viewing here in the Central and the East Coast timeline. Andrew, I cannot find. There it is. Honest to God, I'm looking at the screen. I'm like, where is.
Things got all shuffled up somehow, okay. And I don't know how. I was
maybe that's why. Because
yeah,
I was looking.
It's not you. It's not
for
you.
This.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right, let me set this up just a little bit. We'll go back to some of the things that happened earlier in the show, and we have to actually go back to yesterday because Caitlin Collins asked the question of Joe Biden at the press event that he held in the aftermath of meeting with Vladimir Putin. So this is what it sounded like yesterday originally.
Why are you so confident he'll change his behavior, Mr. President?
Yeah, I'm not confident he'll change his behavior. What do you do all the time? What will change their behavior is that the rest of the world reacts to them and it diminishes their standing in the world. I'm not confident of anything. I'm just stating the fact.
So how does that account to a constructive meeting as President Putin?
If you don't understand that, you're in the wrong business.
He says, if you don't understand that, you're in the wrong business. Now, let's be honest here. If President Trump said anything like that, and even let's be honest, he did say things like, but he was misogynistic,
oh,
he
evil.
Was racist, he was bigoted,
yes.
Everything you could say. And then it ran as the news story on all the other networks. I mean, if you took out after an NBC reporter, CNN ran with it for hours. So it even gets worse because, well, two things. He did apologize, so that's a little different than Trump.
I owe my last question an apology. I shouldn't have been such a wise guy with the last answer I gave. Anyway, thanks for being here.
Uncle Joe,
I think that was
apologizing.
Worse,
yeah, you
than
know,
being
I mean,
a wise guy.
But yeah. Then this is just, oh, this
it's
reminds me of something
rude.
Else, Andrew. Mm-hmm. I can't believe I forgot to mention this. Okay, two things. This is embarrassing, and then I'll circle back.
There he is apologizing for the way he responded to my question. That is completely unnecessary from the president. He did not have to apologize, though I do appreciate that he did there in front of the other reporters as he was about to get on Air Force One to go back to Washington.
All right, I just threw up in my mouth. You know who else apologized? You know who else apologized? And I heaped all this praise yesterday in this segment
Rita
yesterday.
Moreno.
Rita Moreno apologized. I'm so disappointed in her.
I thought she'd be strong enough to hold out.
Me too.
What did she say? What did she say that was wrong? Like, what did she have to apologize?
She didn't have to apologize for anything. Remember, she was just defending Lin-Manuel Miranda
because
he's accused of not putting enough darker people in his movie In the Heights.
All she did was say, I don't think they should be, he's done so much for the culture, you shouldn't go after him of all people.
She was right,
100%. Yeah, of course.
But the woke folks in Hollywood, you could hear it when Colbert pushed back. Man, Rita, careful there. You're not woke enough. So then she apologized. So I was a huge fan of Rita Moreno until today because I thought that that sucked. But going back to the Caitlin Collins stuff, here's our actual cut of the day. I just had to set it up.
Well, I to just comment on that, the thing that I never saw Trump do was apologize to anybody. And I will take it when because sometimes I'm rude
respect,
to somebody. We're
all
like
respect,
that.
I don't
I just
care.
Let me
president.
Just finish what I'm saying.
Well, with all due respect, I don't care if he's apologizing. He just embarrassed himself.
I don't care that you don't
like
care.
Trump.
Just hear what
well,
I'm saying.
I don't
saying.
Care that
okay.
you don't care.
We're going
go so
to we're gonna go. Well, then good, Megan. Then you can be how you always are. We'll be
you
right
can be
back.
Be how you always are.
I know you are, but what am I? I know
oh
you are, but
gosh.
What am I? Megan McCain, Whoopi Goldberg on the definitive political talk show in America, The View, and that's your audio cut of the day on 97.1 FM Talk. A Reardon Roundtable tomorrow. Have a great night.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.